not just from your account, but from that of many other witnesses, a kind of road rage at not being able to proceed through an empty intersection, which wasn't empty, during the January 20th Bush inaugural. So where did he hit you? How did that happen? What exactly, did he hit the front of your bicycle, the back, which wheel hit it, that sort of thing?
He basically hit me from behind, so the front of his bumper on the driver's side actually hit the rear of my bicycle, and then that, of course, created the sucking of the bicycle going under the truck. And I've heard various accounts, as well as my own memory, of the sound of the bicycle, being smashed into the cement and the wheel breaking, essentially. And fortunately, I was leaped from the bicycle out of the way. I was not under the truck with the bike.
So this was he actually was doing this in reverse?
No. The initially he was, I was going behind him, and he actually threw it in reverse, and that's when, at that point I swerved around and shouted at him to watch where he was going, and then at that point is when he got it in reverse, and I feel he was really watching where he was going at that moment.
And you were on his the right side or on his left side?
I passed on the passenger side.
And he
I'm sorry, that's not true. I passed on the driver's side. Right on his driver's side.
And he was coming down the hill from where was he? From what direction was he coming?
He was coming from, I guess it must have been Mission, and going down water that way, and it looked like he was trying to go up water, I guess, to get to the bank.
And were you going up water too, or were you turning onto Pacific?
I was coming down water, and I stopped and kind of watched the folks get started on the protest there.
And where were you stopped watching?
I was stopped on the corner of, I guess, water and what'd you call that? Pacific, maybe even North Pacific, close to the clock tower there.
And he was on the kind of a kitty corner across the street at that point, or
exactly, yeah, in the intersection actually.
And then you drove. And which direction did you then drive?
At that point, after watching the people cross the street, there was a little break in the flow of humans, so I crossed through the crosswalk and then with them rode across the street.
Now the crosswalk is the crosswalk that crosses from Scope Park to the bank. Is that the one we're talking about that crosses Mission Street? Are we talking about
the one that would get you from the post office to the clock tower? Essentially, that's the one that was pretty packed with people.
So I see. So you crossed there.
I went through that crosswalk. Mm-hmm. And then essentially through the intersection.
And where exactly did this contact with the vehicle occur?
This was right at the very beginning, I guess you'd call it, of Front Street there. I mean, ideally I was aiming towards Pacific, but when he began to go in reverse, swerving around kind of oriented me more towards Front than it was Pacific. Had he never gotten into reverse, I would have just narrowly made my way down Pacific there.
You were crossing from the town clock to the post office along that, would you say, within the jaywalking area, or the jaywalking, within the crosswalk area?
No, just to the inside of the crosswalk.
Okay.
Yeah.
You
were. I was actually inside the intersection, riding next parallel to the crosswalk, essentially with the people.
And he was, when you first saw him, where was he?
He was about in the middle of the intersection at that point.
And he was headed toward you. You were in front of his vehicle?
I was actually going around behind his vehicle, so he was about in the middle, and if you kind of imagine how the intersection sort of Y's out there, mm-hmm. I was trying to go behind him to aim myself towards Pacific.
At which point he nearly winged you in reverse?
Exactly.
And you shouted, "Watch out," and then came up on the, where you were still kind of headed for Water Street at a 90-degree angle from him? Is that accurate, or...?
Water Street at 90.
I don't mean Water Street. Headed for Front Street at a 90-degree angle, or headed for Pacific Avenue, one of those two streets?
At the point when he was in reverse, I was headed for Pacific, yes.
And when he hit you?
He almost hit me.
And you warned him, and then where were you headed? Where was your bike? What direction were you pointed in?
At that point, swerving around him essentially oriented me towards Front Street.
And then you were headed toward Front Street, and he was, on the other hand, his vehicle was pointed toward Water Street, or toward, toward Water Street?
I think at that point he was basically aiming at the post office, but I think his intent was actually to go down Front and try and get, to the Wells Fargo that way.
I see. And so you think that he became angry with what you said and then actually began to pursue you, is what you're suggesting?
He was definitely already angry. I think that was just one more thing that etched away at what little calmness he did have.
Why do you say he was angry? How could you tell this?
Well, the way that the truck lunged in reverse, that definitely was not a calm navigating act by any stretch.
And could it have been a technical problem? His foot slipped off the accelerator or slipped on? I mean, did you see anything
There was a question about a clutch popping, and actually with the officer Gracio at the scene, I did request that we walk over, look inside the truck to make sure that there is a clutch, and of course it was an automatic, so mm-hmm. I don't think it was a technical difficulty at all. I think he was very frustrated.
Now, was his window open or was it closed?
That, you know, I've been playing that scene over and over in my head, and I really can't be 100% sure. I think it was closed, though.
Did you ever hear him say anything?
No.
From the vehicle?
No.
There were other people. Was anybody else endangered by this that you saw, or did anybody else get hit by this?
Well, I was around a lot of people, so I can't imagine. I mean, they all had to be in danger. Anyone that was anywhere near me, and I was essentially surrounded by people. And after the fact, you know, there was, you know, a few people came up and, you know, said, "Wow, if that wasn't you, that would have been me." You know, and I think to a lot of the witnesses on the scene, it didn't look like he aimed at me. It looked like he just aimed at the crowd, which is, you know, even a little more frightening.
What do you think? Is it your belief that he was aiming at you, aiming at the crowd, or neither?
I think it was me. I think he aimed at me.
And which wheel struck you again?
That would have been the wheel on his driver's side, his wheel. So.
Okay,
and so then the front of the truck.
So I'm again trying to get to grasp this. You were first behind the truck. Did you come up on the passenger side from behind the truck, or did you come up on the driver's side from behind the truck?
As he was in reverse, I came up on the driver's side, on his side. I guess it's the left-hand side. I don't drive, so it's yeah,
right.
The left side.
And he was, but you were trying to cross the intersection.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm having a little problem with the picture, but I'm going to keep working on that. And again, since we're live, I'm going to try to move on to something a little bit more juicy here.
Okay.
For all the folks out there. There was then, where were you struck yourself? Or were you struck? Your bicycle was struck, and you say you jumped off your bicycle?
Yeah, the bicycle essentially got in between myself and the truck. So, you know, the force from the impact of the truck hitting the bicycle, as well as myself jumping out of the way, I mean, all of my damage came from hitting the ground, not hitting the truck.
Mm-hmm. Now, you hit the ground, and how did you hit the ground?
You know, fortunately I had gloves on, you know, hands first, and kind of did a little tumble roll and you know, slowly got up. And, you know, at that point, you know, people were rushing around making sure I was okay, while a good number of other people were rushing around the truck to not let him leave.
Mm-hmm. Then what happened?
Well, at that point, you know, I just wanted to go home. But, you know, of course I didn't. You know, I heard the siren. It's like instantaneously the paramedics and the fire truck were there. And, you know, they were real, you know, they asked me a million and one times, you know, as well as the crowd, you know, "Are you okay? Are you okay?" And I felt fine. I was, you know, kind of in a state of shock and, you know, more looking down at, you know, my smashed bicycle, thinking, how am I going to ride this thing home? And, you know, not really comprehending what was going on. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the paramedics were really good, and they kind of, like, talked me down, you know, somewhat, and you know, calmed me down a bit, and, you know, felt the ribs and made sure, you know, nothing was really damaged there. And
have you been to a doctor since?
No, I haven't.
Hmm. You should go to a doctor.
Yeah, many have said that.
So, have you noticed any indications, any aches in the neck or back?
No, nothing like that. I mean, you know, I was definitely sore for about a week and you know, a little shell-shocked as well, you know, so physically and psychologically. But, you know, I'm a mountain biker. I've spent a lot of times in the woods, and I've fallen quite a few times. So it's not, I mean, it's never happened like this before, but, you know, just I am used to being a little sore on occasion, and, you know, I could feel it constantly getting better, so I didn't think it was anything to...
Now, did Mr. Gutierrez get out of the car and attempt to determine if you were injured?
No.
What did he do after this incident?
As soon as I was struck, he attempted to drive away there.
Do you say that because you saw that or because you heard others report that?
Well, I saw how far away he was from me in the middle of the street, and I saw the crowd surround his truck.
So
I can't imagine if he were pulling over that people would have had to basically jump in front of the truck to stop it.
How far away was he from you when he stopped his truck, or when he was stopped by the crowd?
Oh, geez, 20 feet? And he wasn't over to the side like he was pulling over. It was actually right in the middle of the street.
Mm-hmm. Now, then what did you do?
At that point, I started to worry about what I needed to do, and I felt really just kind of confused and not sure what happened. And, you know, I saw the crowd really getting... What would you say? You know, getting upset about the whole thing, and you know, citizen's arrest. You know, you just tried to kill that man. You know, and you know, at that point, Joe made some contact with me. You know, saying, you know, can we just write a check? And you know, just get this over with. And, you know, the crowd was real insistent. No, you need to wait for the police. You know, this definitely there needs to be a report filed here.
He offered you some money?
He offered to write me a check, yeah.
Uh-huh.
And just be done with the whole issue. And honestly, at the time, it sounded like a decent idea.
Uh-huh. Did he seem still angry with you? Let me put it this way. You had assumed he was angry with you.
He seemed very, I don't know, very distant or almost detached from the situation. He didn't seem angry. I didn't see any emotion. Now that you mention it, you're the first one that's asked me that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he seemed really got almost professional, if you will.
Well, of course, reports by other witnesses, and you've heard their accounts, I'm sure, are that he was shouting inside his truck. They could see his face contorted and so forth.
Yeah, and I mean, they had a better view of his face than I did, because, you know, if you keep in mind, I mean, he was already pissed off before I even tried to go, you know, behind the truck.
Mm-hmm.
And so
based on the accounts of others, you're
based
saying.
On the accounts of others, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. And you know, I of course did not see his face until I was going, you know, past the window, but that's, you know, that's like a second, you know, at the most, as I'm riding by, you know, shouting, "Hey, look out."
Now, your bike was a total loss, or what happened to your bike?
Yeah, well, he ran over the rear wheel and then the frame, so the rear triangle of the frame is, you know, it's a little bent, and definitely the integrity is not not something you'd want to ride on, and most of the components.
Are you still riding a bike?
Yeah, actually, I have renter's insurance, and they replaced the bicycle for me.
I see.
Yeah, so my insurance has come to the rescue.
So you didn't just sort of chalk this off to experience and go home and, you know, and go out to dancing the next night. You became interested in I guess the next day you heard the Gutierrez account on free radio. You recorded it, you put it on the internet, and I saw you at city council. I think it was either several days later or a week later on a Tuesday when you spoke to city council. Do you remember that?
Yes, I do. Actually, would really kind of got my blood boiling, so to speak, is not so much the incident. I mean, I knew there was wrong done, but was the handling of the incident, and, you know, the listening to the accounts on free radio definitely I don't know, woke me up some. And then I think getting the police report that next Monday just, you know, really floored me. I mean, I went to work from work to half a day. You know, I can't believe I did that, but I went to work, and kind of in a state of shock, and was, you know, found out that the Metro was having trouble getting hold of the police report, and really piqued my interest in wanting to see what this report actually said and why it wasn't being released. So I went down and, you know, paid the $1.20 for the copy and read it, and just stood there and, you know, utter disbelief in the police department, and asked the clerk there if anything else was being done with the case. And
describe the police report and why you felt such shock at reading it.
Well, to some, it says I was at fault for making an illegal left-hand red turn on a red, and you know, just that being stated as fact by an officer who arrived, I think, 20 to 30 minutes after this all happened.
Which officer was that?
That was Officer Garacio, Dominic Garacio.
Now, were you, in fact, talking to Garacio? Do you know what I look like, by the way?
Yes.
Did I attempt to come up to you while you were being interviewed by Garacio?
I don't recall that.
And the reason I mention that is I approached Officer Garacio as he was talking. Garacio, or his fellow officer, refused to take an account from a witness that was complaining to me that she had seen road rage and so forth, and seen what she thought was an almost attempted murder, and the officer wouldn't take the report. And I walked over to see what was going on, and the officer was talking, Officer Garacio, and he may have meant the other officer, because it wasn't too clear, we were at a distance.
Mm-hmm.
But Garacio said to me, "Oh, we're trying to talk here." And of course, my usual response when I see a police officer say that on the street is, "And I'm trying to listen here."
Yeah.
But I didn't say that because I was off to the protest. I just wondered, you know. You said Garacio then apparently accused you of being at fault for making a left turn through a red light.
That's how it came out in the report. He did not give me any indication that's what was going through his mind that day. You know, it was a little odd how much attention was being paid to Joe and one other gentleman and all the officers. It was like there was this little group that was completely separate and isolated from myself and as well as all the eyewitnesses. And it's real interesting to look at the report, which I'm sure you've had. And
I haven't seen the report, actually.
Oh, you haven't?
No, I haven't.
Well, if you need a copy, let me know. But
I do need a copy. And I wonder, are you posting that on the Internet?
Yeah, the police report is on the Internet.
Oh, good, okay.
Yeah, actually, the link in the Metro article goes directly to the police report document, but if you back off one on that link, it's actually, that's the website itself that's got a lot of other information.
Give us the website now, just for the heck of it.
It's home.pacbell.net. And then there's a slash, and it's Sean_D, S-H-A-W-N _D. And for those that don't know, the underscore is that little dash on the keyboard that's on the same key as the minus sign.
Mm-hmm. And if anybody wants to have that repeated, give a call to 423-HUFF at any time, and we'll give you that website, or check the Metro of last week, not the current Metro, but the previous Metro. How long was the police report?
Oh, shoot. The narrative, I think, was about 4 pages, if I'm not mistaken, 4 or 5 pages. There was a few other pages as well, just with the various information of the driver and myself.
What officers wrote it?
That was Gracio's report, and I think it was approved by...
Sergeant Baker?
Oh, I'm not sure. I'm looking.
Sergeant Bailey?
Yeah, 1 second here.
Baker?
Approved by B. Goodwin, whoever that is.
Sergeant Goodwin. Yeah, Sergeant, I don't know what his first name is, but yeah, he's another one of the... We had thought that Baker might have been the person on the scene responsible, since he was walking about, but he was also the fellow who the day before had reportedly arrested Jen Curry with what several witnesses felt was excessive force for biking
that,
the wrong
yeah.
way on Pacific Avenue. You know Jen Curry? We're still trying to reach her. And by the way, if anybody out there, we're talking to Sean Duncan, the bicyclist hit by motorist Joe Gutierrez on January 20th around the town clock area in the protest. If anybody knows Jen Curry, bicyclist arrested by Sergeant Baker the day before and then supposedly thrown into a squad car, according to several witnesses, after either being shaken or struck by Sergeant Baker, again, according to various witnesses, give a call to 423-HUFF, 423-4833. I've also asked a Metro reporter who's doing this story, covering this story, to get in touch, to be listening to the show and give us some of her thoughts. She's been interviewing people and apparently is preparing a response, trying to give Sergeant Bailey the benefit of the doubt. You said you spoke to Sergeant Bailey, who I guess is covering this investigation somehow?
Yes. I think more into the capacity that he's the sergeant in charge of traffic and safety, if I'm not mistaken.
Mm-hmm.
So I think this has sort of fallen into his domain.
Yeah, she may be calling in after we finish talking to you. But you went to counsel. You were rather upset about this, and I remember I heard you speak. I thought you were quite subdued, actually. You presented the issue to City Council on the same day that City Council was funding 3 new police positions for essentially stepping up the pressure on bicyclists. What was your reaction to this?
Well, it was a fairly simple one. I mean, if I can really reduce this and just look at it, it's like, you know, here we are, you know, giving you know, $500,000 to an organization that can't even handle the responsibility it has now. So essentially, we're going to be increasing their level of responsibility with the community, and you know, to me, they've shown that they that it's not the appropriate action. I mean, you know, I don't think they should be the ones solely, you know, in control of making sure that the roads are safe for cyclists, because they're not doing it. I mean, you know, here we have a blatant case. My life was assaulted, you know, by a motorist, and that motorist drove away the same day with, you know, me myself giving, you know, not given any opportunity to press charges. You know, they didn't even offer me a ride home. Obviously, my bicycle was thrashed, you know, and what are they going to do with the cash? That's what I want to know. So it was the issue that I really wanted to bring up for City Council was, you know, we really need to consider who we're giving this money to. I mean, is this, they're asking for funds to be used for a certain, you know, for a certain course of actions, but I don't think they can do those actions.
Of course, my perspective, perhaps a somewhat jaded one, is that the police department almost inevitably gets what it requests from the City Council.
It felt that way.
Yeah, and
I mean, I'm really new to the political process here in Santa Cruz, and this was my first city council meeting, but it was a real eye opener.
Well, I know that Mayor Fitzmaurice, you know, said he was really grateful that you weren't hurt, but we can't talk about your specific case, and ended up after hearing us what seemed to be unanimous testimony asking that this grant not be forwarded, not be rubber stamped, because even though it's paid for by the feds the first year and then half of it the second year, the third year the city has to fund it, and if they stop funding it, they lose all access to these kinds of federal grants.
Mm-hmm.
So it really becomes a sword over the city's head to continue to pay for new positions for the police department. And Fitzmaurice said, oh, well, we know we have a deadline on the 31st. This grant has to be in by, you know, through 4 days ago, 5 days ago, right, which is now. But so instead, we'll simply try to take your considerations into account. And they then had a meeting the next Monday, which was last Monday, at the, where else, police department community room. And did you get to that meeting?
No, I did not.
Well, I didn't get to it, but Scott Graham and the reporter for the Metro did. And they talked about it at some length, and supposedly Fitzmaurice was supposed to have the grant out on Wednesday, the modified grant, to have words in the grant which would somehow point out that the focus is on guaranteeing safety and even-handed concerns for both motorists, bicyclists, and pedestrians. But that language, as far as I know, has not yet been released to the public, although my internet access is down. I've got a computer problem. Any PC people who know how to work on computers, please give a call to 423-HUFF. I desperately need some help to get my computer dealt with. But putting that aside, have you heard anything about the final grant, which was supposed to take this nearly unanimous input from the bikers that said, don't do it, don't, you know, put more cops out there, spend money on a motorcycle instead of bicycle, spend money on helmets instead of night lights, things of that sort.
Other than the discussion going about, no, I haven't heard where it's ended up at this point.
Well, hopefully either Scott Graham or possibly the Metro rider may call in.
You know, Robert, the thing that was real interesting in the city council meeting was the whole focus of what the grant was about, and, you know, how the council kind of turned it into, this could be a lost opportunity if we don't act now. I mean, we would really, you know, I mean, more than one said, you know, it'd be a shame to just let this pass us by because, you know, we're quabbling over details. And so the focus didn't become so much the grant, but the whole idea of losing the potential to get the grant.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, I think, really what made it, you know, pushed it through.
Right, well, that of course is the standard line, whether it's for cops on campus, whether it's for more money for the hosts, whether it's for another $5 million cost overrunning, this already $7 million police station. I don't know if you were there earlier in the afternoon when I spoke. I tried to get the city manager to assert just how much the cost overrun was, and he just sort of disparaged what I was saying, but never gave a dollar figure.
Mm-hmm.
As to the fact that, you know, what was originally a $7 million police station, which is pretty costly, with an indoor shooting range and all the other bells and whistles, became a $12.5 million police station. And the police department gets a third of the budget. You know, I mean, it's a hefty situation. It needs citizen oversight, real citizen oversight. And, of course, this has been a concern of mine for a long time. And so, you know, I have a particular interest when a particular group begins to see that all is not well,
mm-hmm.
to do with the bicyclists. What can the public do to help you? I know that, have you filed a complaint yet with the Citizens Police rubber stamping?
Not
sorry,
yet.
Review
not
board?
Yet. I'm really trying to, you know, I would say exercise my patience here and, you know, wait and see what this revised report's going to say. And I'm not hopeful, you know, that it is going to say what I'd like it to, but at the same time, I do want to give them the opportunity to do what I feel is the right thing here.
Mm-hmm.
As far as what people out there can do, I mean, you know, send email to news at MetCruz. I think it's metcruz.net. You can get the email address from any of the news articles in the Metro. And just in support of this reporter and her coverage of the story, you know, I've been told that, you know, the quote-unquote editorial staff of the Metro is not real fond of the waves that she's making in the community. Whereas, you know, come on, she was an eyewitness. You know, this person was an eyewitness. It's kind of hard not, you know, to be a reporter and an eyewitness and not write down what you saw. I mean, isn't that the whole idea of being a reporter? And also, you know, and I haven't requested this yet, but it's probably going to, you know, looks like it's getting close to time to start, you know, writing the police department itself as well. And I know some folks have already taken the initiative and done that. I haven't focused the energy on that yet because I'm really trying to, you know, I don't want to piss them off unless I have to, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm sure they're already quite pissed off with you, but...
Well, they sound real nice on the phone still, so I think I've got a little bit of opportunity for hope here, but
okay.
I do see it dwindling.
Right, well, I know that you're going to be, hopefully, you've gotten a Monday deadline to get that report. Is that when you're hoping to see it?
Yes, exactly.
Maybe you can get back to us and let us know how things are going.
I can definitely do that. Maybe offline we can talk about.
Oh, then yeah, sure. You can give a call to 423-HUFF, and you can talk to my producer there, 423-4833. Ask anyone else, by the way, if they have any questions about this case or information they want to give or computer help for all of us, should we say, challenged radio broadcasters who know nothing about computers.
Well, we might be able to work something out there as well.
Oh, wow. Well, look, Sean, that's great. Is there more? I've kind of zipped you through it, but is there any more you want to add?
You know, there probably is, Robert, but I think we've covered the core, definitely.
Yeah.
And I'm really somewhat reluctant to go on at too great length until I see what this report that comes out tomorrow is going to say.
Okay, well then let's hope that It's good news. I frankly have little hope that it's good news, but I would love to be surprised.
As would I.
All right. We've been talking to Sean Duncan. Thank you very much, Sean.
Thank you, Robert.
Bye-bye.
You are tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. Phone lines are open at 427-3772. If you want to talk about anything you've been listening to, whether it's police and bicyclists, civil rights for poor people. Usually we spend a lot of time talking about the Santa Cruz sleeping ban struggle and the struggle for decriminalization of the homeless. We've touched on that in a couple of points here and at a couple of points, and we'll be touching on it again. Here's a brief interview from the NAACP Kwame Mafune speech that was, I guess, was almost a week and a half ago now. A lot of folks were stirred to galvanized action by this national NAACP activist. I only wish he'd spend a little time talking a little bit about local Santa Cruz situations. So often these nationally famous people like Ralph Nader come to town, and the local Green Party sellouts who are in office, like Tim Fitzmaurice, glom on to the situation. We get people as inappropriate as Marcy Greenwood, the UCSC "I Steal Your Housing and Grin at You" chancellor, making introductory speeches for these folks, and essentially it's kind of obscene. However, the people who attended were galvanized. The people who attended were impressed. I spent most of my time gathering signatures to establish an activist corps to help another campaign to end the sleeping ban and decriminalize homeless people. We haven't really gotten back to those folks. If you signed that petition, get on our butt. Give us a call at 423-HUFF off air. That's the number for Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. Here's a brief interview from that rally.
Okay, we're talking to
Sharif Traylor.
And you've been here since 76.
I've been here since 76, but I did leave for about 15 years, and I've just returned back to the community in the last 3.5 months or so.
Right. And you noticed this controversy about the sleeping ban.
Well, you have just brought it to my attention, but what I am aware of is that since 1976, Santa Cruz has had a homelessness problem. I've noticed that, and seems to be somewhat higher than other communities that I've visited. And I've always had questions of where is that coming from? What's the genesis? What's the cause of that homelessness problem? And I've always thought that it had something to do with a few things. First of all, people come to Santa Cruz because they like it. And back in 76, it seems like it was tolerant to homelessness. So people came here because it was very tolerant, analogous to maybe Berkeley. But I'm starting to think in the contemporary world that it has more to do with the economic pressures that are happening here with the high prices of houses, renting, and home ownership. So I know that it's a real problem, and I don't know the solution, but it seems to me that we should have some elasticity when it comes to people trying to have shelter in the community.
Here, here. Of course, what we're working on, some of us anyway, is the law, is just to get rid of this law that criminalizes people outside, particularly if there is no shelter for people. I mean, it seems to me, and to some of us, that if you don't have shelter for people, but you forbid them from sleeping, that there's sort of a kind of a bizarre contradiction there.
Yeah, it does seem to be somewhat, it seems to be somewhat non-receptive. Of course, a lot of people can pay the rents here. It's a mild climate. It's attractive, just like us that can pay the rents. People want to be here. So we have to find a way to accommodate folks. And if we don't have shelters, then we have to look at alternatives. And if people can, for example, sleep in their vans and they can do it in a respectful manner for those in the communities that they're sleeping in, then I don't know why we shouldn't be open to the concept.
Thank you. Anything else you want to add?
Nope. I'd just like to say this gentleman that's interviewing me, what's your name?
Robert,
I hope you keep up the good work.
Hey, thank you very much.
Like Infumi said tonight, it's about action for social change, and it's not just rhetorical or ideological or academic.
So, want to sign up and do some action?
Certainly.
Name, number, email. What do you think your specialties are, and how much time do you think you actually have?
On the line with us now is another eyewitness to what happened to Sean Duncan, Sarah. Hi, Sarah.
Hi, Robert. How's it going?
I'm good. Do we should reveal your other identity, or just want to be known as...
Yeah, sure. I work at Metro Santa Cruz. I'm their news editor, and I wrote a story for the paper a few weeks ago about what happened to Sean Duncan, the cyclist who was hit. And I spoke to him yesterday, and I know that he was on the air earlier, so I won't reiterate everything he said, but the one thing that he said to me is that he was told by the police that they needed from him handwritten and signed statements from witnesses who saw what happened. And I know that to date he's having difficulty finding the people who were there because it's 2 weeks after the event. So if anybody who actually saw what happened could do that for Sean, I think it would help him a lot.
Now, you wrote what really was the longest single subject story in a news column in the in the Metro Santa Cruz that I've ever seen.
Uh-huh.
It was the entire column was devoted to this whole incident. It must have struck you as a very serious matter.
Right. Well, I was there, so you know it's a rare thing for a journalist to actually eyewitness everything rather than just simply interviewing people after the event. And I have to say that when I was there, I thought that I wouldn't be reporting on it because there were a lot of people witness what happened and the police were called, and having eyewitnessed it myself and seen that it was not a random little traffic accident, when I realized that nothing was happening at the end, I really felt, wow, this is not right.
I know there wasn't much of a story in the Sentinel on it.
Right, well, what can I say?
Right. Whatever you'd like. This is Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Yeah, well, at the moment I'm hoping. I went to a meeting that was held by the mayor, and the police were there, and so were bicycle activists, and the subject of the meeting was a grant that the police have applied for, a $500,000 grant.
That was the Monday meeting at the community room at the police station?
It was in the ABC room at the Civic Center.
Oh, okay. I guess they moved it.
And they were discussing a $500,000 grant that they're applying for, and the focus of that grant seemed to be mostly aimed at cyclists and pedestrians. And as several bike activists pointed out, the word motorist was almost completely missing from any of the grant proposal other than in an introductory paragraph. And I hope that if the police do indeed get that grant, that some of the monies are directed at educating both the police and the motorists that in an accident of any kind, a motorist is, you know, operating what can easily become a lethal weapon. And therefore, any act of rage, you know, even if it's split second, can cost somebody a leg or a life. And I know that in, I believe it's Marin County, they have a very proactive policy whereby the motorists, the police will actually ticket motorists who honk at cyclists in a sort of aggressive way. And, you know, that might be the opposite extreme of what we need. But personally, I really hope that we're going to change the way we have an attitude that there is a motor privilege whereby a car can do almost anything they want in terms of running people off the road, forcing seniors to almost sprint, you know, out of the way. And instead, it'd be the other way, where the onus is on the motorist to behave responsibly in their vehicle.
Sarah, are you a bicyclist or motorist?
I have a car and I have a bike, and I like to ride my bike very much, and I like to drive too. You know, it's a very useful vehicle when you want to get somewhere.
Well, do you live far from work, or?
No, I mostly cycle to work in Santa Cruz, so I am on the roads, and I do often have the sense that I am in jeopardy, and I prefer to go on, you know, bike paths where I don't have to share it with cars.
Any encounters with the police, positive or negative, on the biking situation?
Not recently. I have been ticketed by the police for not stopping at a stop sign on a bicycle.
Were you guilty?
I was guilty. I didn't stop, and you know, I did think about that and go to court and recognize and learn actually that as a cyclist, I am subject to the vehicle code as much as a driver is.
Which some people feel is inappropriate for bicyclists.
Well, you know, I know one can argue that both ways. I think there's situations where, as a cyclist, if you're riding up a hill, you would rather not have to stop at a stop sign and lose your momentum. But generally speaking, I'm totally fine about obeying the laws, right? But I want to see enforcement equally. You know, I want to see motorists and cyclists being ticketed. persecuted equally for the things they do. And right now, you know, a lot of psychists feel, and, you know, having witnessed the events 2 weeks ago, that more often than not, it's the cyclists who get ticketed for, you know, riding on the sidewalk, riding down the street the wrong way, which sometimes they do because of safety reasons, sometimes not. Whereas, you know, in an encounter with a driver and a cyclist is involved, I have heard a lot of cases of where the driver is not blamed and the cyclist is, as was the case with Sean, as you heard today. And that is what I think is the root of this, is an attitude, you know, an attitude towards cyclists as somehow being some kind of minority group, you know, who are dangerous and annoying and should not be there. And what I learned from getting a ticket was that I have an equal right to be on the road as the car, and that I do not have to be in the gutter, and I do not have to get out of the way. You know, because of the difference of vehicle size, you know, me on my bike exposed and a motorist in his metal shell or her metal shell, you know, most, me included, most cyclists get out of the way if we can. Sometimes we can't, you know. I don't think that Sean Duncan thought he would get hit, because I think, and I didn't hear how he described things, but he actually said, he said to the driver, you know, watch out, and so that they actually had sort of eye contact before he got hit.
Yeah, he says that he thinks this infuriated the driver, actually then began to pursue him. That was his feeling.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know,
but you saw some of this.
Yeah, I did see some
of it. Where were you standing?
I was on Pacific Avenue. I was watching the anti-Bush demonstrators. I was taking photographs. And
how far away were you?
Well, I'm not a good one for, you know, distances, but I was kind of...
How many car lengths away would you say?
I was outside the... I wasn't a block. I was outside the hole in the ground that is next to the coffee shop called Lulu Carpenters.
Uh-huh.
And I was drawn to it by the sound of the squealing is what drew my attention away from the demonstration to the car.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw the car hit and not stop and almost run over Duncan's leg and then continue. And I took a photograph of the car because I didn't think it was going to stop. And I think everyone who was there thought it wasn't going to stop. And ran and surged into the road, and that's when the truck stopped, you know, not before. And so I was really there during the whole thing. It was very chaotic at first, with a lot of people angry. And I think in another time and place, you know, Santa Cruz is a moderate town full of, you know, people who basically espouse the philosophy of nonviolence. I think in some other places, people might have dragged that driver out of the car and, you know, punched him, wrecked his car, and they did not. And I think they should be commended for that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they did say to him things like, you know, you should lose your license, you should get anger counseling, you know, you should be in jail. And there were so many witnesses. And so it was a surprise to me when 50 minutes later the police arrived and began to, you know, organize things. And eventually, you know, we were left with a situation where the driver drove off, the police drove off, and the cyclist was left with a broken bike.
Hmm. And how many witnesses did you actually speak to?
Well, I have spoken to probably about 10 people now in total. I didn't speak to everybody who was assembled there at the time, because I had no idea, as this began to unfold, that, you know, that the police were not going to be doing the right thing, in my eyes at least. And so I only began to speak to people as I realized that nothing was really happening in that direction. I began to get that vibe, you know, that, oh, okay, they're not seeing it as road rage, they're not seeing it as an assault. And I thought, you know, there we are outside the post office, if somebody had been out there wielding a knife, then it would have been assault with a deadly weapon, and it wouldn't have had to be how deep was the knife wound or somebody killed, it would have been an assault. And you know, a car is a deadly weapon if it's used wrong, and all of us in cars can lose our tempers, and most of us at some point have. We all know that. So I don't hold myself, you know, to be some righteous person who never gets angry, but I just know that if you do something in life, you have to face consequences, usually.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, of course, it depends on other things, too. One would think you would have to face consequences. It seems some people are insulated from that. But now, in terms of you sort of continued to investigate this. And I guess you still are. You're going to there was a little kind of teaser in the last Metro where, you know, whereas the week before we got all this juicy information from you that filled a whole page. Although no photos of the car. Why didn't your photo appear? I wonder.
Of the car?
Yeah.
Well, the pictures I took were pretty amateurish, you know, on a disposable camera, and I used the one picture that really shows. Was the truck was in that picture?
That's what I mean, the truck, I'm sorry.
Yeah, the truck. It's more a question of whether you could actually see anything in the print newsprint.
But you continue to pursue this, and you mentioned that, I guess, Sergeant Bailey, who's doing the investigation, and also Scott, Sean, said that he too was, he chatted with Bailey at some length, and...
I was told by Bailey after the safety grant meeting that they were still investigating and that they would make a decision at the end of this week, which would have been Friday, or by the beginning of next week, which would be Monday. So I will call on Monday and see what they have decided, you know.
Will there be time for you to put that in your column, or will your column be sort of...
Well, what I am trying to do right now is put together a bigger story about motor privilege in Santa Cruz and across the nation, really, and tying that into things that have happened in San Francisco recently, where a cyclist was killed by an 18-wheeler whilst actually being part of a memorial for a fellow cyclist who's been run over. And the DA has promised to look into that. You know, that case is still up in the air. across the nation, you know, these same things are happening over and over again. And I just think that we're reaching a point now that we need to take action. Santa Cruz is a beautiful place. People like to ride their motorbikes. You know, Sean was telling me he was riding a Santa Cruz made bike, a Chameleon. So I'm hoping that the biking community, the business people in this community, citizens, pedestrians, seniors, anybody who uses the road who isn't a motorist is going to gather together and say, you know, we need a change in attitude, it seems, on the part of the police.
Yeah, you should have been listening earlier. We got a call from activist Steve Argue that he observed police apparently doing not just, we've heard of bicycle traps, the one near the New Leaf Market where they trap bicyclists going the wrong way and they give them tickets on the one-way Pacific Avenue stretch. They also, in the past, and apparently now again, if Mr. Argue's comments are accurate, are ticketing pedestrians crossing the crosswalk against the red, not against the light, but against the don't walk signs over near the Homeless Services Center, and they're catching mostly homeless people at that point. So it's interesting that I think, I of course, I'm always pleased when the spotlight is put on the issue of the police department, because I don't think it can do anything but good, frankly. I mean, I think you know, the Metro, unfortunately, the paper you work for has a reputation for, I think, covering for the police department often, or ignoring their abuses, and it's always good when, I guess, if a reporter is thrown into the middle of it and she actually sees what's going on, it's certainly much harder to ignore.
Right. Well, I just try to follow that principle that maybe is an old-fashioned one, is that one, you know, should strive to tell the truth, and, you know, with the information that one has available. I was fortunate to see something firsthand. That's a very rare situation for a journalist. I was also fortunate that it wasn't a horrible situation where the victim, you know, lost a limb. And when I'm myself right now in the middle of this, I bear in mind that, you know, I have lived in many places, and, you know, the police force is, you know, pretty carries, is it executes, you know, enforces the laws. And I think right now, if the police enforce the laws as they stand around driving, we would have a better situation for cyclists. And when the police are applying for a grant based on their statistics, then it's really important that the statistics accurately reflect what happened.
Mm-hmm.
And in the case of Sean Duncan, you know, the statistics as they stand, according to the police report that currently stands, Duncan was blamed. And therefore, if you were putting him in a column of statistics, he would be in the cyclist caused the accident statistic. And that worries me if that is happening over and over again. So, you know, my quest is to tell the story, and you know, I'm writing for change, for positive change.
Now, you mentioned at the beginning of your call that that Sean is looking for eyewitnesses to give written accounts as
right.
to what they saw. Are you also looking yourself for eyewitnesses for your
yeah,
story,
well,
or
I
tales
would,
of other bicyclists who have had problems
yeah,
with police?
I would be. I have already received a lot of emails and letters from people who say that they were in an accident and they called the police and they did not get, you know, anything done that helped them. But yes, anybody who has had an experience like that, they're very welcome to call or write to the Metro and or email us. I would be happy to gather those reports. I would be interested to also share them with the bike activists and the police department and Sean. So really, it's
and the city council, perhaps.
And the city council. Anybody who's interested in, you know, having a safer road for, you know, the many people. It's not just cyclists, it's the pedestrians, the seniors.
Kids?
The kids, yeah, the kids. And, yeah.
What number should they call to contact you?
Okay, well, if they want to call me, they should call 457-9000. Extension 214.
457-9000, extension 214, and you are?
Sarah Phelan, news editor.
Okay, we're talking to Sarah Phelan. And Sarah, you also have been following the City Council bicycle, I should say, three cops to police the bicyclist grant, as I call it. And they were going to have the so-called modified grant request out on Wednesday, which the mayor was assuring everybody up and down would take all the bicyclist concerns into account, or some of them. Have you heard anything more about that?
I haven't. I attended that meeting, and I am waiting to see a revised written form of it in which the language is changed to reflect that motorists need to be educated equally as much as anybody else. And also that the police, you know, I think that was a point that was brought up. I don't know if that will be in the language of the report, was a need for the police to see motorists in a slightly different light.
Mm-hmm. Well, I thought that they were going to, I mean, Fitzmaurice had to have the grant request in by
right.
Wednesday, so I don't know what's keeping them, but who
right.
knows.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Well, maybe you'll have more pull than I will. you do work for the Metro, which, although it doesn't have the distinguished reputation of the Sentinel, or the Urinal, as I like to call it, it's been around for a while, and if we get some good reporting, of course, well, it will be most impressive. And I want to really thank you for covering the story that you have covered so far. Anything more you want to say on this issue?
I think that's good for now. I'm just everybody out there on their bikes, you know, enjoy the weather and take care.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Robert.
All right.
Okay.
Sir.
Bye now.
Bye bye.
And we've been covering the case of the incident on January 20th when bicyclist Sean Duncan was hit by motorist Joe Gutierrez. We're running out of time. Here's a quick call.
You're on free radio.
Hey, how's everybody out there in Radio Land?
Hey, Merlin. I want to apologize for not putting on your introductory music, which you recommended we run by the viewers or the listeners. It unfortunately didn't come out on the tape. What's the good word? You have about 30 seconds, hombre.
Oh, I just thought we'd just chew up some time here and talk about the weather. I'm on the radio, too.
Hey, whatever you want to talk about for the next 28 seconds.
Nothing, I just say appreciate your show.
Okay.
Eventually, you're going to have to break down, get off your ass, and go buy some of these records I'm suggesting.
It could be. Listen, thank you very much, and keep those suggestions coming in.
Okay, buddy.
All righty.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
So, a couple of quick announcements as we hit the road for the Little Red Hen. There is a club cruise, again, coming up that concerns homeless topics, and that's a community television show that takes place every Tuesday and Thursday from 7 to 7:30 in the evening on Channel 27. This week it's going to be myself interviewing Linda LeMaster, former chair of the Homeless Issues Task Force, which I repeatedly called the Homeless Issues Task Farce. But they ended up with some pretty good recommendations, which Mayor Sugar and Vice Mayor Fitzmaurice deep-sixed pretty quickly. And that's interesting. Again, 7 to 7:30, Channel 27, Tuesday and Thursday evenings. On Thursday at 8:30 in the morning, if you want to watch the fireworks or whatever happens, the Coffee Klatch 3, that's me, Becky Johnson, and Bernard Klitzner, go to court to try to get the city off the back of the people. The people in this case being the three of us and other people who want to lobby to end the sleeping ban by the method of sitting in the city council offices on the in the public area, not in terms of a sit-in, but simply to give notes to council members, give out flyers to people passing by, essentially lobby for a change in the law that makes sleeping outside or in a vehicle a $54 crime and actually a several hundred dollar crime once the warrant goes out. We are currently barred from going to an entire building at City Hall because Administrative Assistant Anna Brooks, I believe under the tutelage of Mayor Tim Fitzmaurice, has decided to accuse us of harassing her for such crimes as trying to get change for a $20 bill, pilfering pens, quote, occupying the furniture, which we're talking about public seats here, and we would always get up for folks to, who want to use it. It's just, I mean, it's ludicrous. But it shows you what power can do. Again, 8:30, Department 7, Thursday, February 8th. Come to court in the morning and stand in solidarity or sit in solidarity or wander around in solidarity with us. For more information, give a call to 423-HUFF, 423-4833. I want to apologize listener Roxana Kistapache and those who are waiting to hear her testimony at the Commission for the Prevention of Violence Against Women. We don't have time for that this show. We are going to probably, we're going to hope to get to it on Thursday. Also want to apologize to listeners who we're looking forward to hearing the interview with Portland activist and attorney Mickey Ryan on the Portland Gallagher decision, the decision that overturned that city's whole camping ordinance. We're also hoping on Thursday to get into things like more of Richard Edmondson's interview at San Francisco Liberation Radio. We may be able to actually, that interview may air earlier if the V-Man has his way. He's a man who's particularly interested in issues of free radio, and he may take that interview and shape it and make it available as a loop tape earlier. We have interviews out at the Homeless Services Center we want to get on the air, plus interviews from the California Homeless Rights Outreach Project, which has reports from the Bay Area and other cities around the state about what's going on with homeless civil rights. A Dolphin Leaf follow-up should be coming. We're interested in the drug war. If you have any reports about how the drug war is a war on you locally, particularly locally, after all this, Daryl Cole seems to have his head up the ass of the police department. He's the Sentinel writer that goes on and on about the drug bust, but never mentions the costs to the citizenry, the number of innocent people in jail, and the incredibly ineffectual nature of this kind of campaign. So I'm going to sign off and collect my stuff together and play a little bit from Inner City, the fine, overlooked musical, which has the numbers you never heard, but now you get a chance to hear. You want to get in touch with me? I'm your host, Bathrobes Pierre Robert Norris. Catch me off the air at 423-HUFF, or tune in next Thursday from 6 to 8 here on Free Radio Santa Cruz at 96.3. Stay tuned for The Little Red Hen.
If wishes were horses, beggars would ride, and rich and poor in peace would abide. If only the poor would smell sweet and be neat and clean up the street and talk nice and polite and not publicly fight and have college degrees and station wagon keys and interesting jobs that are also secure, or else kept out of sight, and learn to endure. There'd be nothing wrong with that, just being cool. There'd be nothing wrong with that, just being. If wishes for horses, beggars would ride. Wishes for horses, beggars would ride. Wishes for horses, beggars would ride. Ride. nothing wrong with their just being poor. It is hard to do without a man's smell in the house.
You'll gather round me, people, a story I will tell of pretty boy Floyd, an outlaw. Oklahoma knew him well. It was in the town of Shawnee, it was Saturday afternoon, his wife beside him in his wagon, it was into town they rode. There a deputy sheriff approached him, in a manner rather rude, using vulgar words of language, and his wife she overheard. Well, pretty boy grabbed the lock chain, and the deputy grabbed his gun, in the fight that followed. He laid that deputy down. Well, there's many a starving farmer, the same old story told, how an outlaw paid their mortgage and saved their little home. Others tell you of a stranger who came to beg a meal, and underneath his napkin left $1,000 bill. It was in Oklahoma City, it was on a Christmas day, there came a whole carload of groceries with a letter that did say, well, you say that I'm an outlaw, you tell me I'm a thief, well, here's a Christmas dinner for the families on relief. Through this world I've traveled, I've seen lots of funny men. Some will rob you with a six-gun, and some with a fountain pen. But as through this world you ramble, and as through this world you roam, you will never see an outlaw drive a family from their home.
Right, you're listening to we have a new microphone. Free Radio Santa Cruz 96.3 FM, and you're listening to the Little Red Hen Show with Emma and Bobby Yaga. And we got some stories for you today out of Feminist Fairy Tales by Barbara Walker. Our first one for you today is called Barbie.
Okay, it's about 12:30. We're outside Las Manos, the store next to the Hosts HQ downtown on February 6th, 2001. We're talking to
Paul Reynolds.
Paul, you just showed me a letter you got with a ticket in it. Again, apparently it even has a claims violation of 5.04090. This is a letter you got in the mail, mm-hmm. where the officer swears out a verified complaint. Actually, it's a notice of correction and proof of service. The amending officer's name is Butchie Baker, interestingly enough. He's the sergeant who is occasionally on the mall sent to 155 Center Street, apparently an address of a friend.
Yeah.
And this is a ticket for you, Paul, from January 26th, pretty recent, for display of merchandise by badge number 105.
And see, he changed that. The original ticket that he gave me, he didn't put that on there. The original ticket that he didn't put this.
He made some changes between
that. Some changes.
Not quite sure exactly. Oh, it should be. He changed the citation.
He changed the citation number and he put this down without a license.
Without a license.
Without a license.
Interestingly enough, so you remember this encounter? This happened, I guess, about a week ago.
Totally. I was sitting out in front of the coffee, the baked roasters. Pacific Roasters.
Uh-huh.
And I was just sitting there making my jewelry, and I had some of my stuff laid out next to me.
Right.
And I wasn't saying anything to anybody. I wasn't like approaching people and saying I have this for sale or anything.
Right.
And I had a candle going.
Right. What time of day was it?
It was evening. It was nighttime. It had just gotten dark. Gotten dark. And he came up and he asked me if I had a permit to have a fire.
Sergeant?
Yep, this is Sergeant Officer
Butch? Sergeant Lauren Butchie Baker.
Baker.
Perhaps.
And,
it says on the ticket.
Okay. And, he came up and he asked me if I had a permit to have a fire, to have an open fire, because I had a candle going. I said, no, I did not have a permit, and I blew out my candle. And, then he said, well, do you have a permit to sell stuff on the mall? And I said, no, but I'm not selling it. I just have it for people to look at. And he says, well, it looks like you're selling it to me. And I said, well, it's not for sale. I like to sit here and make my jewelry, because it's a nice day and it's a nice place. And I like to share it with my friends, and I had gems and stones and beads out too, and I like to share those with my friends and make trades and stuff with my friends that hang out here on the mall, and I had no intent of selling it, and I did not sell any of it. And he went to the car, went back to the car, ran my name, came back and gave me the ticket.
Did he ask you for ID?
He did ask me for ID, and I didn't have ID on me, but I do have proper identification.
Uh-huh. And was anybody witnessing this?
Yeah, actually, Chris. Chris, the guitar player up there, who always plays in that little place right there.
Near Palace, former Palace Arts.
Yep, exactly, right there. He was right there, and he saw the whole thing.
And was Sergeant Baker alone, or did he have any officers with him?
He was alone.
And did he say that he'd gotten a complaint?
No, he didn't say that he got a complaint, no.
Had he ever approached you before?
Yes, he had approached me before, right around Thanksgiving. When I first got into town, me and my friends were sitting in that same exact spot, and him and one of the, not a town host, but the officers in the blue suits, the CSOs, one of the CSOs came up, and they said that we're not allowed to have merchandise on display, and we said it wasn't on display, we were just making it there.
Uh-huh.
And at the time, he was rude to me at the time, and I said to him, well,
Same sergeant.
Mm-hmm. I said to him, well, excuse me, sir, but, and then he stopped me. And he said, excuse me, what? I didn't hear you fart. I didn't hear you fart. Why'd you say excuse me? Like, that's something that a 12-year-old would say to you,
uh-huh.
You know? So, anyways, from that instant, like, we put all our stuff away. That was way back in Thanksgiving. Put all our stuff away, and I hadn't seen him until just now.
Had you been on the mall regularly up to that point, or not so much? Or?
Not so much, on and off, like sometimes. I have a job.
What kind of work do you do?
I'm a painter. Yep.
Painter of houses.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, I paint homes.
So this is a $162 ticket you've gotten.
Is that what it is?
Conceivably, that's the maximum.
Wow.
I would encourage you to go to court to get this. First, you go to the basement of this county building at 701 Ocean.
Yeah, I've been there twice, actually. The first time, they gave me this, which is Superior Court of California. That I went.
Okay, now you went. Had you already been arraigned on this ticket or not?
Not arraigned. What he did was, at the bottom of the ticket here, where it says when I'm supposed to appear, it says I have to appear by...
Right.
He crossed out when he said by the 26th.
Right, so you haven't been arraigned yet. What I'm going to tell you is, and I'm telling this to the audience too, who are listening, who have otherwise had problems with tickets, you want to make sure you disqualify referee John Mulligan, who would be the person who would normally hear this ticket in the basement of the county building. And the way to do that is on any day between 8 and 5, maybe 8 and 4 if you want to be safe, you go down to the basement of the county building, go up to one of the windows in the county building where they handle infraction tickets.
Yep.
You tell them you want to disqualify referee Mulligan and take the case into another court. You have the right to do that. They'll ask you to sign a statement that says, I swear under penalty of perjury that I believe Mulligan is prejudiced. And you can say, yeah, I do, because this weirdo on the street with the tape recorder told me that he is, and I believe everything he says.
Okay.
So,
do you have a pen?
California? Sure. Then when you've done that, when you've disqualified Mulligan, they will give you, bad pencil, they will give you a date in another court. And you then go to that court, you plead not guilty, and then you call Huff, 423-4833, which is the Huff line. Let us know what's going on. And not that we haven't got lawyers or anything, but we have, a little experience so we can advise you as to our suggestions on how to defend yourself. And that's my suggestion to you.
And he's a judge, J-U-D-G?
He's a referee. His name is Mulligan. You want to disqualify him, and then we'll throw it into another court. And then you go to the other court, you plead not guilty, and then they set trial in a week, and then you call Huff, and you talk to them about how to deal with the trial. Again, we're not lawyers. We're just people who observed these kinds of trials before.
And the number is for Huff? It's
423-HUFF, 423-4833. We're talking to an anonymous woman, who I will call Jay, who on January 19th in the afternoon on Pacific Avenue saw an arrest by Sergeant Lauren, also known as Butchie Baker, of a woman named Jen Curry. Can you tell us a little bit about what happened that day?
Oh, I just happened to be walking down the mall past the Del Mar Theater toward the end of the block, and I see some people sitting on a bench, and one lady, I don't know, she must be about 23, healthy-looking, nice-looking, pleasant-looking, pleasant personality as I could see her interact with other people. And there's this Baker on the scene grabbing her, handcuffing her.
Baker, you Sergeant Baker?
I found that out later. That's his name.
Uh-huh.
I don't, and he's putting his body into her body. I don't mean anything sexual, but I mean just overdoing it and handcuffing her. From what they were telling me, was had to do with the fact she was going the wrong way on her bike.
On Pacific Avenue.
Yeah, I didn't see any of that. I just saw the interaction between Baker and her, and her yelling at the top of her lungs, please tell me, what am I being arrested for? Please let me know what I'm being arrested for. And I was either four or five policemen come up on the scene too, and there was a female policeman, and I was appalled, and you could see various types of people, walking down the mall at the same time I was, who was as appalled as I was at the situation from different backgrounds, whether they were hippie looking, whether they were straight looking, whether they were touristy looking. They made comments, why should it take five policemen for this one pleasant woman? I'm saying pleasant.
Uh-huh.
And so I ran right over to the scene where they were putting her in the police car. And I said, I want to know your names, and I want to know your badge numbers right now. And then somebody else came named Eric, who took names down and badge numbers. He's got the record. And I ran over. I said, I told Baker he was a wimp to be treating a woman like this, and over an issue of over going the wrong way on a bicycle. Even if she had drugs on her, I mean, not that that has anything to do with it. Why would she need this many people to hold her down? She's not on PCP. She's not acting wild or crazy. And
what was she saying while all this was going on?
Just what I told you was, please tell me, and she repeated it, why am I being arrested?
Did the sergeant ever announce that to her, the crowd you could see?
Announce what, sir?
What he was being arrested for, what she was being arrested for.
No. Now, that's what I've heard, and that's what I've been told over and over again, is why she was arrested. So then I went around to the back of the other side of the vehicle, the police vehicle, and I says, please give us your name so we can help you. And she said, Jenny Curry. And
did you give a phone number?
No, she did not. But Eric took more information down than I did and called Becky to expose this. And I called him a wimp. I called him a wimp for treating a woman like that.
Right, well, it's important, I think, that people who saw this incident go to the Citizens Police Review Board and file a complaint, not because the board will ever do anything, but because it becomes a record as to what's happened. And they can always say, well, why didn't you go to the Citizens Police Review Board? And you say, well, I did.
Yeah.
I did. And nothing happened.
Okay. Maybe I should do that then.
Yeah. Not hard. They're open from 9 to 12. They're at 915 Cedar Street, one block over, two blocks down, kitty corner from the Little Shanghai restaurant. So.
And they're at the Police Review Board. Oh, I know where it is.
Yeah, they're the same office as the Commission for the Prevention of Violence Against Women. So.
What are you going to do?
Go ahead.
You know, I don't understand when I'm on the mall and I see policemen giving tickets, my question is, are they giving warnings? I don't see warning tickets. You know, just $150 fine for this, and, oh, I don't think it'll affect your driver's license. You know, like they're almost happy to be giving a ticket out to, you know, to interfere with somebody's life over some petty thing, and with a slap on a big fine. What about warnings? Don't we live in the days of where there's warnings anymore? It seems like it permeates our whole system these days. There aren't any warnings for a lot of things.
Right, particularly in a town like Santa Cruz, famed for its progressive, laid-back style. Thank you very much, and if anybody's seen anything of Jen Curry or knows who she is or saw this incident, which was a Friday afternoon right before Bush's inaugural the next day, please give a call to 423-HUFF, 423-4833.